Hey there, gang. David Michael Phelps here, and welcome to the first episode of Season 3 of Working Man. This season has been a long time coming, and the reason for that is, well, we've been launching a new trade school. As you can imagine, when you're in the middle of something like that, you have to prioritize, and there wasn't the greatest amount of time to record episodes of Working Man, a project that was itself started during the Great Freeze of 2020, that is to say, the coronavirus pandemic. But now the school is off and running, and I will be giving an update on the school at the end of the episode. But in the meantime, Working Man is back, and today's guest is a special one for me. Adam Mills is an award-winning brewer in Cincinnati, Ohio. In fact, the time between the launch of this episode and the recording of this interview, Adam's brewery, Cartridge Brewing, was awarded a bronze medal, a silver medal, and a gold medal in the U.S. Open Beer Championship, which, much like Ron Burgundy, is kind of a big deal. Adam is the father of six, and he also happens to be one of my oldest and dearest friends, the godfather of my children, and my own sponsor when I came into the Catholic Church 20-some years ago. Today, we discuss the relationship between brewing beer and the spiritual life, the importance of simplicity and attention in both, and why chickpeas aren't a common ingredient in craft beer. The thing I like about Adam is his straightforward wisdom, and I think you'll find much worth pondering in the next few minutes. So, without further ado, here's Adam Mills.
My name is Adam Mills, and I am head brewer at Cartridge Brewing Company in Cincinnati.
And tell me, how in the world do you get to be someone who gets to brew beer for a living?
Well, it just so happened that it was you that years ago requested that I potentially make beer for an Oktoberfest party the next year. And I got into it. There's a small homebrew shop in Grand Rapids. Shout out to Siciliano's Market. And I got into just making some beer at home. And at first it was terrible. And then I found out that you could judge beer and compete, and that was very appealing to me as a young man. And yeah, kind of got more and more into that scene. I was teaching at-risk kids for 10 years prior to that. And then kind of with the whole, you know, kind of the early early to mid 2000s, kind of the second craft beer boom, I got in on that as more and more breweries were opening and moved to the professional side.
So there's a certain romance to this sort of work, right? I mean, I'm sure you probably must have the experience that people hear that you're a brewer and they're, oh, wow, how glamorous or glorious or rock star.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Is it as glamorous and romantic as it sounds?
Well, you know, I mean, it's a tremendous amount of fun, but it's manual labor. I like to say that we're kind of overappreciated janitors. You know, 80-90% of what we do is clean. Yeah, I mean, that's really the heart and soul of what we're doing, being process oriented and things like that. So, yeah, it's hot, sweaty work. You know, I mean, breweries are always hot and humid and
paint a picture of that for us, because you know, if television is any guide, which it is in so many things, then we picture brewery and brewmasters being the sort of people who have, you know, these carboys and these golden lit areas where they just taste things for a living. Unpack a typical day for a brewer for us.
So for me, I'm really fortunate that I have two really fantastic team members, Maggie and Josh. We really come in, the breweries, this time of year, the breweries are already hot. It's usually about at least 10 degrees hotter than outside. So this time of year, it's about, you know, 95 degrees in there. Humidity's high. For the size batches that we're making, so every time we brew, we make 30 half barrel kegs. So the big kegs that you're used to seeing, we make 30 of those every time we brew. And so usually you need anywhere between 800 to 1200 pounds of malted barley, in order to, make a batch like that. That's gotta be, you know, lugged inside and then put through the mill. and then on into the actual hot side portion of the process. That hot side portion of the process is called wort production, W-O-R-T. And so that's what most people think of when you think of, are you brewing? That's actually making wort. We probably make wort 2 to 3 times a week. That will flex. Some weeks it's 5 days a week. Some weeks it's zero. But yeah. And then it's, like I said, it's just a lot of manual stuff. We operate a lot of pumps, where we're moving hot water, hot chemical, around in order to, clean and sanitize tanks. The primary things we're using are pumps to push, liquid. We're using heat, and the primary measure of, heat that we use is steam. So we're a steam powered brewery, with a boiler. And then we use pressure, CO2 pressure. We push liquid with pressure. So a lot of times people walk in and they see all these stainless steel tanks and these big tanks and stuff. And it seems far more complex than what it is, because really, functionally, those are the only things going on. We have a way to get something hot. We push it with gas, or we push it with a motor. Brewing hasn't changed a tremendous amount over the centuries. It's still essentially the same thing. You know, we're turning starch into sugar.
Do people in your experience who've come to work for you, do you find they're a little surprised at how sort of laborious it is to brew? I mean, and again, with the rise of microbrews and all these sort of craft beers, I think there's this vision of breweries as like artists, and they are, I'm sure, but they're sweaty artists, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's kind of the thing. I think people can get swept up in that stuff a little bit too. And they have like this notion of the brewer being the guy that's, you know, the sun is peeking over his shoulder and he's pouring grain from hand to hand and just pushing his face into various raw materials. And then later always finishing every scene with toasting somebody near him as, you know, foam slops over the side of his glass. It's not a lot of that, you know what I mean? But I do think it's a lot of hard work. The manual labor thing does sometimes catch people by surprise. But it sorts out pretty quick. I remember a plumber buddy of mine said that, you know, within a few weeks, you know, pretty quick if somebody's going to be able to hack it. You know what I mean? And it's similar with this, because it is kind of a newer popular scene. Those people tend to sort themselves out a bit, you know?
Well, I mean, I think there's an appropriate amount of, de-romanticizing that's appropriate, but there is some romance to it. I mean, there is, like I said, I mean, it's hard work, but it is artistry. Maybe speak a little bit about, how do you move from this being a hobby to a vocation? I mean, you move from teaching at-risk kids and then now you brew beer. That's a very interesting dynamic. What goes through a guy's head when he decides to make a change like that?
Well, it's a leap, you know, and I think like from, I was actually just talking with one of my team members about that this week. You know, I used to work with at-risk kids. She used to work for a nonprofit, and there's this hurdle you have to jump where you say, you know, I was working for a nonprofit, I was working, you know, with kids, and now I'm making beer. Like, I don't feel like I'm doing the same thing for society. But I think the danger in that is like, I like the position I'm in now, because it's really easy to say like, oh, I work for a nonprofit, I'm doing good. And then you treat everybody that you come into contact with like garbage, right? Because in the back of your head, you know that you do good for a living. And so there's not as much like culpability there potentially, or there's like that false comfort. And so like now, like I have to make the choice daily, right? Like it's not my, I don't get paid to go and work with kids that have had a hard time. You know what I mean? Like I have to dive deep with my family. It's all about seeing Christ in others, right? And that's my responsibility at this point because I'm not doing like something outreachy. But, you know, really for me, vocationally, like that's kind of the exciting thing right now is all right, so I make beer. That's my genre. Like, I don't know if that's the right way to say it, but like what I actually do is like I develop people and I attempt to love people like Christ. You know what I mean? And it just so happens that the brewery is the way I can do that. The great thing about our industry is you can still apprentice into it. You don't need a degree. It's kind of like the old story, like with kitchens, you can start in the dish pit and work your way up. You know, if you're hungry and you want to learn, you can do that. So, that's the gratifying thing about what I'm doing right now. And that's how I kind of made that leap of saying, you know, I went from working with at-risk kids to doing what I'm doing now. And I think it's actually pushed me, deeper into my vocation because you have to kind of look for it then at that point, right?
Well, I want to come back to that and take a deep dive, but just a quick detour on something you just mentioned about this still being an apprenticeable trade. What do you look for? I mean, what makes for a good apprentice, a good brewer's apprentice, and what makes for a poor one?
Well, I'll say this: what I'm looking for a lot of times right now is I like a blank slate. I like people that I obviously hardworking kind of is obviously, you know, key. But the other thing is there's something to, and maybe this is the teacher in me talking, but there's something to working with younger people. They're out of college. They got into their field after college and it wasn't for them. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't what they thought it would be. And then I love working with young adults that are just hungry for a vision. You know what I mean? That because I can say, like, listen, if you come here, you're trustworthy and you work hard, like I can open up doors for you in this industry, right? Like that's what I want to do is I always want to be giving my people a chance to grow and to develop, right? But I think those are the key things. And right now, I mean, it's such an insane blessing. I have two people on my team, and it's just the three of us, as far as the brewery goes. But high integrity, like legitimately joyful people, like that enjoy working hard and they want to learn. It's really the dream. The flip side is it's people that feel as if they've deserved things, right? That's always the challenging thing. Especially coming from like my vantage point when I try to provide opportunity and give a lot, that's always something that strikes an uncomfortable chord for me, or an irritating chord is when people aren't grateful for, you know, the opportunity in front of them.
Well, so obviously, you know, we've known each other a long time and I've watched your career over 20 plus years, and I wonder if you could say a little bit about how these two things are related. On the one hand, you have what you're talking about, which is brewing is the genre. Your goal is developing people, loving people, being present to them. And then on the other side, there's the work itself. There's the craft itself. There's the pursuit of excellence itself. And very often those things are put in opposition to each other. Sometimes people excuse shoddy work because I'm really here for the people, and some people will abuse people because I'm here to do excellent work.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a priority of one over the other, but there still has to be both. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about that, how you manage to do that, what your experience has told you about how one might do that. Because for what it's worth, I mean, I'm a biased fellow here, but I've had your beer and it's superb, right?
Well, that's kind of you.
And so I mean, there's excellent beer being made. There's an excellent work being done. So how do you manage to do excellent with people and in the craft itself?
It's attention to detail, and really everything we do is we're always looking for, I always tell people when I'm training them, you know, like there's some things that we do here that, you know, I try to stay up. I try to stay well-researched And there's some things that we do here that are very much like it's research driven and everything. Some things kind of just make me feel like good about the process. You know what I mean? But really, you try to keep an open floor. I really encourage my people to research. I try to provide a lot of resources as far as that, because all of us learning and putting that all together, because beer is great and beer is interesting and beer is culture. Right. And it can be a big part of community. Right. And so I try to convey my passion for doing things the right way and to always stay learning. And then you combine that with already people are generally excited about doing the beer thing anyways. Yeah, I think that's kind of what drives us. I try to give my people clear paths forward. I try to kind of go like a twofold approach, like one, like utilize the things, natural gifts that they're bringing to the table.
Yeah.
One of my people, Maggie is really strong in an area I'm not, which is organization. And so she does a lot of the inventory stuff and whatever. And I want to continue to develop that role, but I also don't want to pigeonhole her. Right. And so I always tell them, listen, let's take advantage of the things that you have a gift for, but then let's also find things you're passionate for as well within the industry as far as learning and whatnot. So and kind of try to feed things on both fronts.
You know, it's interesting you talk about attention to detail. I just had a conversation with some of our new guys in orientation. And the thing that we stress at the beginning is the virtue of attentiveness and how fundamental a virtue attentiveness is. If you don't pay attention, then you can't be present to your responsibilities. You can't do them excellently. And be those responsibilities, your responsibilities in your relationship or in your work or spiritual responsibilities. Attentiveness is sort of the substrate of every other excellent action. I wonder if in your experience, you, not just necessarily in brewing, but what do you have to say about like, what are the threats to attention to detail? I mean, what are the temptations to get one away from attention to detail, either in brewing or in managing teams or just generally even?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think it's one of the things that I've been really lucky with is the people that I've been bringing on board have a real appreciation for doing manual labor. I think sometimes the 20-somethings out there, the younger generation can get a bad rap as far as that goes. But in my experience, if you give them a purpose with the hard work, like they love it. You know what I mean? There's a level of satisfaction that you get from manual labor that you don't necessarily get from behind a desk. There's something to being exhausted, right? Like physically exhausted, like that's a good, you know, and the balance on that is, of course, making sure that your people feel supported and everything through that. And that also kind of showing them that, listen, you know, some of this stuff is a grind, but I always tell them like, so tank cleaning is a really big portion. There's kind of in our industry, there's a hot side and a cold side. The hot side is actually creating sugar water, malt sugar water out of malt. And that's the boil, you know, that's the mash and the boil and all that stuff. But then there's the cold side. And on the cold side, everything has to be sanitary or as sanitary, as sanitized as we can make it, you know. And I always tell them, like, if you can appreciate cleaning a tank as well as you know how and, like, get satisfaction out of that, you're going to go a long way in this industry. It's kind of appreciating simple things. And appreciating the details. And I think that plays out really well into the rest of life as well. Even just especially from building discipline from that standpoint, you know.
You know, it's really fascinating about that. I mean, there are a lot of lines of work where attention to detail, maybe doesn't really show up, say, in a final product, right? Or you might say someone's enjoyment of detail and precision isn't something that shows up in the final product, but it seems to me that the joy or the satisfaction that someone might find in cleaning a tank well in your business shows up as, I mean, it shows up in the product, in the beer. right?
Absolutely.
In a, very distinct way, and that people literally taste the quality of someone's enjoyment for details like that.
Yeah, no, and I mean, like, and especially with the way I think the industry is going a little bit, you know, for a while, craft beer was all about the boldest flavors possible, kind of pushing people to the most bitter or the most sour or the sweetest beer, different things like that. And increasingly, we're moving back toward a product that's really approachable and that you can enjoy by the pint. You know, there's a handful of styles that are meant to be, you know, these big coffee and bourbon barrel aged imperial stouts. That's not something you're drinking when it's 90 degrees. It's not an everyday beer. You know what I mean? That's a 10-ounce pour and you sit on it for an hour and a half as you drink it, you know. But our industry is increasingly moving toward beer that's easier to drink, still has character, everything like that is still flavor forward, but well balanced and inviting, right? And I think what we always talk about is we never want the beer to stop somebody from drinking it. Sometimes you get like halfway through a pint and you're already like, oh yeah, I need to finish this so I can get to my next one. You know what I mean? And like, you're not enjoying the second half of the pint. The idea is to like have prudence be that thing that says, hey, I need to stop. You know what I mean? Because you want it to be so inviting and so refreshing, you know, while still pushing bold flavor, right?
Yeah.
And so the interesting thing is where the quality comes in is the more accessible beers we're making and the more gently flavored that beers are, the more likely it is that those flaws show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that's really the great thing. And you know, I think as with a lot of things, that it's just keeping it simple.
Yeah.
You know, it's following your process. It's being meticulous and then letting the process that wants to happen, happen.
Yeah. There's something very zen about this, it seems to me, right? There's something, you know, it's in the simplicity. And it's
it's very much the spiritual life, right? Because I mean, I think we've all gone through, and I'm probably wading through a time of it right now where I'm trying to make things happen. You know what I mean? By the force of my own will, when realizing that, you know, in reality, God has given us gifts, and it's through those gifts that we're actually reaching and loving other people. And so times when my stress spikes is when I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to fix everything, when in reality we just constantly need to be putting those things at the foot of the cross, right? And especially like that idea of like, hey, you know, I want to be on the path of holiness. Well, okay, I'm gonna fast, I'm going to spend X number of hours in front of the Eucharist, I'm going to do all these things, and in my experience, it's more like I need to let go. I need to let go of various things that I need to be loved by God. You know what I mean? I need to marinate in that fact that I'm made in His image and likeness. He's given me gifts, and I'm responsible to use those. But it's all those good things are flowing through Him. You know what I mean? And I think it's a pretty common thing to be saying, well, we're going to make this stuff happen, which I think that's most times how I get in trouble.
Yeah. And okay. So I hesitate to say what I'm about to say, because we're sliding either back into potential over romanticization of beer, or we're sliding into something that is campy as all get out, but I'm going to go for it anyway.
There you go.
And because it just occurred to me as I hear you talk about this, is that there is an interesting, maybe metaphorical parallel that could be brought between, this is so stupid, between sort of the mentality approaching sort of craft brew is, oh my goodness, have you had this, you know, coffee infused bourbon barrel aged jalapeno hummus based stout, right?
Actually, I need to be getting hummus into a beer. I haven't done that.
Yeah, so right.
I think you're onto something.
Yeah, because nothing says, you know, Irish stout like chickpeas.
And
but you know, it's and all those things are good, right? So let's put all of the good things in, right?
Yeah.
And that's on one side. And so the parallel is something like just a simple, clean, classic, precise. You introduced me to the Munich Helles style, right? It's just beautiful. It's simple. It's drinkable. It's enjoyable. It's just lovely. But it's sort of like pure, right? Cleansing. There's a parallel to be drawn between something like that and, you know, the church gives us tons of good things, right? Tons of devotionals, sure. Tons of saints, tons of practices, you know? And so I think it's easy to say like, oh, you know, I'm going to be a craft beer Catholic where I'm going to throw everything in there, right? I got to do this and I got to do that and I got to do this and I got to do that. And then of course, when you inevitably fail to shove all the hummus into the stout, right?
Sure.
Then you somehow feel like, wow, I'm not good at this. I'm poor at this. When in fact, maybe what's needed is just, I don't know. There's this very simple, you know, precise, clean, it's like the old, Mother Teresa line, I believe, right? Just do small things, right? With great love. You don't need to do all of the things. Just do those little things you do just excellently.
Well, you know, and the other thing too is, I mean, really what we're doing is we're attempting to set up a situation where the yeast can do what they're going to do, right?
We're
really like yeast ranchers, right? And so, I mean, we can do all of these things, but what's actually making the beer is the yeast. How much can you hear the train in the background?
Beautifully. It's very nostalgic. Keep going.
But no, I mean, I think there is a real connection between that and the spiritual life. You know what I mean? Like, because what we're doing very simply is we're taking malt, we're introducing hot water, a process that's, you know, in that certain range, enzymes in the malt convert the starch to sugar. You know, we boil that sugar water, and then we try to create an ideal situation for the yeast. And it's actually the yeast that's doing it. It's actually outside of our hands. Mm. You know what I mean? And again, yeah, I think there is that big play into the spiritual life. Like, yeah, there's choices we can make to open ourselves to the spirit. You kind of just need to open yourself to it, right? Participate in it. You know what I mean? Without trying to be in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter. Like once a beer is in the tank and there's yeast on it and it's fermenting, it doesn't matter how hard I'm working in the brewery. It doesn't make the yeast do anything differently. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You sit back and let it happen. You know what I mean? And I think it's that consistency of our faith where we try to put ourselves before God and allow him to change us. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And there's something very beautiful to be said about it's the Christian life is a work of preparation, right. Of sort of preparing the way, so to speak, and waiting and being faithful to wait and even be faithful in that rhythm and that routine of very simple, basic things. But yeah, you're right. But at the end of the day, the life that you're living isn't life that's the result of your effort being lived inside you by this thing that gets blown across the waters, right?
Sure, sure.
So, yeah. Well, that's lovely. That's lovely. Well, what do you suppose is your biggest challenge as a brewer? Let's widen that out. What do you suppose is your biggest challenge as a working guy in this current climate that we live in socially?
I think, and it's actually one of the things that, you know, it's really easy to say, well, you know, like, well, how do I live my faith in my daily life? How do I live my faith at work? And I think the fascinating thing is I used to think that it was, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to get my stuff together. I'm going to be a man of prayer. I'm going to be a man of fasting. I'm going to do all this almsgiving. I'm going to read all this scripture. I'm going to do all these things. And then at some point, like 10 years from now, I'm going to be holy. And then I'm going to be able to speak the gospel to people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is where our culture is at is to be living your life as a Catholic man, as a Catholic person. Like you can be really bad at it and it still sticks out. Mm. Like you can be terrible at evangelization. but just try and try. And like the simple thing for me, it was actually one of the podcasts you did before with the gentleman who was a member of the Swiss Guard, and he was talking about Pope John Paul II and how he just sees Christ in people. And that's something that hit me very, very hard. And I think that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm doing a poor job of it daily, you know, a poor job. But even doing a poor job, there's something different about the way you interact with people when even you set about that task and do it poorly. You know what I mean? People notice a difference, and it draws them in. I think our culture is kind of so devoid of truth that even if you're poorly living it out poorly, it still resounds. You know, yeah. So,
boy, thank God that takes the pressure off.
Just be bad at it.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. We're good. I've got that down.
Oh, but yeah, I think, and it's kind of one of the big, and it's been one of the big eye openers for me. And it's really helped me like understand what my vocation actually is right now is, and being a parent. So I have six kids ranging from 19 to 5 months old, and the parenthood teaches you so much, you know, and oftentimes like not necessarily like worthy of merit on your part. Like sometimes parenthood has a way of beating stuff into you. I don't know if that sounds terrible or not, but it forces you to be patient. You know what I mean? Forces you to be giving. I'm realizing now, like, my work is really an extension of my fatherhood. And I've just really been trying to keep the focus on trying to take up that leadership role of saying, again, like, yeah, I make beer, but what I'm really doing is I'm trying to help people grow. I'm trying to find the unique thing, like that divine spark in each person, right? And then help them to see it. That's kind of been the biggest focus for me. And, you know, because for a long time, the whole beer thing was, it was about me proving that I was great at something. You know what I mean? It was an ego feed for me. And now it's not. I feel fortunate to be in a situation where I can practice this discipline and I can train others into it. And it can actually be an expression of love. You know what I mean? Hopefully that doesn't sound too ridiculous, but yeah, that's where I'm at with it right now.
No, it doesn't sound ridiculous at all. We just, you know, finished a semester with these guys. We talk about this concept we call the husbandi, which is a Norse word, which we get our word husband from. And yeah. Husbandi, it means like a house bondsman, right? It means the man who cares for a household. And this is where we get the word husband, but it's also where we get the word husbandry. And that the natural extension of fatherhood is building a household that extends first for your immediate family, but then the extension of the community that comes out of that. And I think there's a real opportunity to remind people that, you know, our work is the opportunity to sort of husband a community, you know, in the way like animal husbandry, right? But this is a community, and so it's really cool to hear you say that, because that's a refrain that's been coming up. You know, I would if you haven't watched it in a while, I think you need to go back. And I this is a very unpopular opinion. I think the musical Les Mis is awful. And in just about every way possible, but
hot takes.
Yeah, hot takes. I'm a big fan of the film that was done in the late '90s with Liam Neeson and Jeffrey Rush. It's excellent. It's really excellent, and they do an especially good job of pulling out of Hugo's novel that aspect of Valjean, which is not Valjean the criminal or whatever, but Valjean the father and the man who husbands communities around him, you know, who takes his skills and wit and strength to build people around him. And it's a beautiful image of a work.
You know, just kind of touching back on that point again, just to flesh it out a little bit more, like, you know, brewing is an interesting thing. It's a very, very public thing, and people can weigh in on it publicly. There's apps like Untappd and whatever, and people can get on there and they can drink your stout and then write, I hate stouts, quarter star out of five. and then that, like, that's factored in when people like look up this beer and say, oh, should I drink this? You know what I mean? So it's this curious public arena where, you know, you can be judged, by, you know, some people who know what they're talking about and some people who don't. And it can be a weird ego spot. You know what I mean? Because it's something that the beer you make is a point of pride and you want to be great at it. But how I've kind of come to terms with that over the years is, and what I tell my people is, you know, like, we're never going to make the perfect German Helles, right? Like, there's brewmasters that have been making it for 50 years with ultra complex practices, and they're still not happy either, right? But what we should really be doing is just participating in the process, right? Always pushing ourselves to grow. And so we always say that what we're doing is aiming for the bullseye, knowing that we'll never hit it. Hmm. So it keeps the ego down a little bit. Like, it changes that push to be perfect into the push to never stop growing. Hmm. You know what I mean? And just enjoying that process of saying we're always aiming at the bullseye, even though we're never going to hit it. Hmm. It's very, very freeing. You know what I mean? And especially, like I said, something that you are so attached to, you know, like something that you create and then the public consumes. So yeah, that's a big push for us. And it's actually been really, really healthy. I used to think there's a handful of really big beer competitions out there. And I used to say to myself, well, okay, if I could enter five beers in this competition and I got five gold medals and I won Brewmaster and Brewery of the Year, how long would I be happy with that? And I would think on it and think on it. And in all honesty, I'd be satisfied for about 3 to 4 weeks. And then I would be laboring under the idea of, well, if I don't do it again next year, this year was a lie. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. And so it was a really unhealthy way of looking at it. And now, just like myself, and then also teaching my people to say, like, we're participating in, and, you know, stealing Simon Sinek language, it's playing the infinite game, right? That there's no end to what we're doing. And what we can hope to do is we're never going to reinvent the wheel, right? I mean, beer's been going on for a really long time. And when people start trying to reinvent the wheel, they end up shoving fruity pebbles and stuff into their beer.
Or chickpeas
and things get stupid. You know what I mean? But more so, it's just participating in that process and trying to get better.
Hey, thanks for listening, folks. And thanks to Adam Mills of Cartridge Brewing in Hopping Happening, Cincinnati, Ohio. Listen, if you're ever in that neighborhood, stop by Cartridge Brewing. It's a supremely cool brewery, converted from an old cartridge factory at the bottom of this crazy deep gully. My son and I made a visit down there this summer, and the food was great, and the service was great, and the beer was, as I've come to expect from Adam, superb. By the way, I recommend the Up the Hill Munich Helles or the Cartucho Mexican Lager. Both are something to behold, and both have a pride of place today in my refrigerator. I mentioned at the front of this episode that I'd be giving a quick update on what's been happening the last several months at Harmel Academy of the Trades, and so here goes. As many of you know, The original plan for Harmel was to launch in fall of 2020. But like the rest of the world's plans, COVID put the kibosh on that. So, after launching in January of 2021, and after making up some ground this past summer, we have now completed our first academic year, thanks be to God. We have now also welcomed our second class of tradesmen in training, so we now have 23 students over two classes in two programs. Now, when Working Man started, there were no students and there were only two of us on staff, but now we have a team of seven full and part-time folks, instructors, admin people, communications people. We've had hundreds of folks come out to offer support in all sorts of ways, donating money, donating equipment, making introductions, sharing the word about Harmel to help us recruit new students. It's all been a bit crazy, if you want to know the truth, but it's really been something to see. And now that we're a fully operational battle station, we're starting to find new rhythms, so hopefully projects like Working Man will be able to get back on the road with the regularity we like. So if you want to continue to be kept up to date on what's going on, follow us on the social medias, make sure that you're signed up for our newsletter at harmelacademy.org, and subscribe here to Working Man. As always, we can't do what we do without you. So if you know priests or parents or working guys or donors or young men who might benefit from knowing about us or being a part of our community, would you please send them our way? We're now recruiting for fall of 2022, and hopefully soon we'll have some exciting news about new program offerings and opportunities. So anything you can do to help us to get the word out, please do so. And as always, we appreciate you. Thanks much.